Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peterson Toscano. Welcome to episode 39 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Saturday, August 24th, 2019. In the Art House, we will experiment with the future. Using our imaginations, we will consider the questions, what does climate change success look like? What will it sound like? What does it smell like? Sean Daigh walks us through a powerful thought experiment. It will help you envision many benefits that come from decarbonizing our world. We also have answers to last month's puzzler question. It was about climate adaptation, and who better to answer it than Doug Parsons, the host of America Adapts podcast. But first, I want to introduce you to gnocchi. No, not the yummy Italian dumpling made from mashed potatoes, flour, and eggs. I want to introduce you to NNOCCI, the National Network for Ocean and Climate Change Interpretation. For nearly 10 years, gnocchi has connected with people in zoos, aquariums, and parks around the USA. Just how many people?
440 individuals who are in the network after 10 years. And these are folks who are trained to train others in climate communication. They are from 38 different states, from 184 different institutions. And collectively, we reach each year between all of our institutions, something to the order of 190 million people a year.
That's Hannah Pickard. She has a great job.
I work at the New England Aquarium. I get to travel all over the country and train people in how to talk to their friends and family about climate change and help spread some hope.
Hannah is also one of gnocchi's creators. So what exactly is gnocchi?
A combination of climate scientists and informal science educators. The folks that you would engage with if you walked into an aquarium, you walked into a zoo, you walked into the national park, and there's somebody there who can chat with you, can share stories about the animals or their collections. This network primarily focuses on those two audiences and the idea that learning together between the climate scientists and the educators, that there's even increased benefit, that the relationship of having a colleague who's a climate scientist, or if you're a scientist, having a colleague who's an educator, that that also makes your own professional work stronger, is core to our work.
In episode 5, Eileen Flanagan mentions the four roles necessary for social change: advocate, rebel, organizer, and helper. Hannah Pickard operates in the role of helper. She researches effective strategies for talking about climate change. Then she teaches others these better communication practices. In a moment, you will meet someone from the San Francisco Zoo who has successfully used the gnocchi techniques. But first, I asked Hannah what advice she has for you and for me, those of us who want to be better climate change communicators.
Get rid of the doom and gloom. It feels so natural to do it, especially when we feel this sense of urgency or internal rage that you feel when you are talking to people who don't seem to care the way you care or who don't see the urgency the way you do. The natural reaction is to like want to scream at them or want to like wring their necks. We've got these ticking clock ideas. We paint all the death and despair that's going to happen as a result. And while all of those things feel like they paint a picture of urgency, the research really shows us that that becomes very overwhelming. It immediately leads to kind of disengagement. So it might, for some people, might motivate them to give you money right now or to sign this one petition, but it is shown to not provide that long-term support that we need to actually make the society changes that we're going for.
So if doom and gloom doesn't work, how can we get people interested and engaged?
Paint a picture of what the vision for our future is. When we talk about the added benefits of some of this climate adaptation or mitigation work, when we talk about the future that we want to see, It's a much more hopeful way to approach the conversation. It's much easier to get buy-in. That's really helpful. If you're overwhelmed, you want to find ways to not get involved. And so it's a lot easier to find a way to pick something apart. Whereas if you're starting with something that is this vision of the future, it's a lot easier for people to find ways to then say, okay, how do I get on board with this? That does sound like a life I want to live.
Later in the Art House, we will immerse ourselves in a successful future vision. Hannah also has advice for us about our tone. Keep it positive and pragmatic.
There are steps we can take. We have tools now. Kind of keeping that tone helps people who feel like, hey, you know, this climate thing, I'm really curious about it, but I'm afraid to get yelled at by a denier. I'm afraid to get yelled at by like an eco-evangelist. Like, I just want to learn about it and I don't want to be shamed in any direction.
Hannah trained zoo and aquarium educators to make a case for why it matters to act on climate change. She tells me, it's important to remember people do not care about the same thing for the same reasons. Therefore, Noki stresses the importance of focusing on values. The New England Aquarium sees over 1 million visitors a year. Hannah and her team have only about 2 minutes to dig into what visitors care about and then connect those values to climate change.
And so we did some research to figure out what values do most Americans share that are culturally instilled within us that, when prompted, allow people to think through to a policy level of like what needs to be done on climate change.
Their research identified two motivating values.
The number one value that we all share that kind of cues into this idea that we need to get some action is the idea of protection. So we have a deeply held idea that we need to protect the people and places that we love. The other one is responsible management. We all kind of have this idea that we need to solve problems earlier before they become too big to solve. And that if we have steps that we can take now that are practical, it's in the best interest of ourselves and future generations to take that action now. We don't have to wait for some fancy science solution where we're going to be pulling carbon from the sky. We can start now, and there's action actually happening all around us, and there's groups that are working, and you can join to help really internalize the idea that we all have a role in being kind of a climate hero. And so being able to expand your communication to include other people's values is really helpful.
In a moment, you will hear an example of how this values-first method works. For us climate communicators, Hannah also stresses the importance of listening.
Making sure that it's not just you talking at somebody, but that you're listening and you're asking them to explain their thinking. Those are all signs of really positive communications.
Hannah has even more practical advice to share with us about climate communication, but first I want to introduce you to one of these Noki climate heroes. Meet Blair Bazarich.
So I work at the San Francisco Zoo. I am an education and engagement manager there. So I run our Zoomobile program, which takes animals to schools all over the Bay Area, up to an hour away from the zoo, and teaches 45-minute lessons with live animals on different science or environmental topics from pre-K all the way through college, sometimes senior centers.
She also runs three different teen volunteer programs at the zoo. In her spare time, Blair co-hosts one of my all-time favorite podcasts, This Week in Science.
We do a weekly recording every Wednesday night, and we talk about science news. I focus on environmental issues and mostly animal science.
Blair is such a big fan of Noki, she has become a leader in the network.
And I do a bunch of stuff related to that. I work in the leadership group on impact and evaluation. I lead a lot of different trainings, and I just do a lot of guerrilla climate change education in my own personal life.
Regularly, she sees firsthand the power of Noki's values-first education approach. Even so, she admits,
it's very counterintuitive for how we've been doing environmental education for at least my entire life, and I'm pretty sure a lot longer than that. It's values-first, so why do you care about this? And then you explain the process, and you give people solutions. And that's kind of the very bare bones element of it.
Blair echoes Hannah's emphasis on maintaining the right kind of tone in our conversations.
We actually have an opportunity to have a conversation that is reasonable and explanatory, that shows a shared interest in a bright future. And if we use that reasonable tone and we talk about this values first communication that I brought up before, that allows us to bring people into the conversation who might feel alienated if we went at them with facts right away. So it gives us an opportunity to bring people into a conversation that normally would feel excluded.
She also understands the lasting power of infusing our climate presentations with hope.
There's this idea that sex sells, fear sells, all this kind of stuff. And that's true when you talk about things like driving clicks or driving money. A lot of the time, fear is the thing that sells in the very short term, which is why in fundraising, you see a lot of tactics of crisis imaging and this word about the climate crisis. This is very common. But what we found through social science research, and the thing that I have really found in my own personal anecdotal experience, is that hope is a lasting influence that permeates from just 5 minutes to an hour, to days, to weeks, to months, to years. I think this is the thing that keeps me going personally.
I know it is hard to stay hopeful when we see political leaders who dismiss the risks of climate change. We are seeing the effects of it all around us. This summer, I facilitated a day of climate change storytelling in front of the U.S. Capitol. Volunteers from Citizens Climate Lobby stood up to tell their stories. One after another, they poured out their grief about the dangerous disruptions in their lives and their loved ones' lives, all because of climate change. It was intense, heavy. I shared this with Blair.
Recognizing that there is grief involved with these things, it's important to air it. So I think there's a moment for the good of those individuals who spoke that day to let them speak and let them feel the emotions that they are feeling. There's a lot of social emotional research that Noki has helped look through and explain and support, looking at what it takes to be a climate communicator. And I was listening to a previous episode of this show, and I was hearing about this dancer who started smoking because of the stress of talking about this kind of stuff. And this social emotional research actually found that being an environmental educator over a long period of time has similar manifestations to PTSD. This is the weight that we carry as environmental educators and climate change educators and people who walk around trying to spread the good word of climate change. We have the potential to wear ourselves ragged and actually be kind of counterproductive in our own way.
Blair points out some of what we can do to avoid crumbling under this weight.
The solution to that is to reach out to each other, celebrate our successes, and rely on people in our own support networks. Identify the people who you can call when you had a really bad day or you saw some really bad news. And keep hope in your heart. It's what I do every single day when I go to work. Yeah, there's a lot of bad news out there, but I am hopeful for the next generation, for my current generation, for the country, for the planet, for the state, whatever. I am hopeful ultimately, and you have to be, because that permeates in your communications and it makes people want to be a part of a solution, but it also permeates into your workspace and your personal space. I don't want to be this Charlie Brown character with my shoulders forward and the gray cloud over my head, who's a bummer to talk to. Nobody wants to talk to that person. They want to talk to the person who's energized and excited for the future. And I want to be that person.
At Citizens Climate Education, we often say action is an antidote to despair.
There's things that I can do for climate change that is achievable, that is solutions focused, that is something that I can see a direct action of in my own time. And it's something that I can join other people in doing. Now, for me, most of my days are spent on climate action because it turns out talking about climate change is a real actionable solution. And so in my conversations, in my ways that I teach other people to talk about climate change, I am making my own climate action. And that's because of this issue where not everyone's talking about it. So if I can get more people talking about it, more people are interested in doing something about it, there's a ripple effect from just talking about climate change.
Over at Nokē, Hannah Pickard urges climate communicators to move away from talking so much about the effects of climate change. Do not focus on the laundry list of what is happening. She also says we do not need to talk too much about the mechanisms of how climate change happens. People do not need to know that much science about it. She can explain the mechanisms in a few short sentences.
We actually have boiled it down to a couple of metaphors that are really helpful. When we burn fossil fuels like coal, oil, and natural gas for our energy needs, we release extra carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. In the atmosphere, that extra carbon dioxide acts like a heat-trapping blanket surrounding the planet and making things warmer.
Then Hannah connects these mechanisms to a single effect of climate change. This is especially powerful when you can talk about how it affects the community locally.
The oceans absorb some of that extra heat. That heat in the ocean causes water to expand, which is one of the mechanisms behind the sea level rise that we keep hearing about in Boston.
Hannah then will connect the risk of sea level rise in Boston to the two values that motivate people to act. First, protection. We need to protect the people and places we love. And second, responsible management. We need to solve problems earlier before they get too big. If we have practical steps to address the problem, it is in our best interest to take action now. Over and over, Hannah turns the conversation back to solutions.
If we're dealing with the problem being fossil fuels for our energy use, then let's talk about the solutions. Let's talk about getting off fossil fuels. And that's the conversation that you really want to have, right? You really want to have people not debating or getting confused or turned around in the science, but really being able to focus on what can we do about it? What are we already trying to do about it? What can you do to help? That's where the bulk of the conversation should be.
Providing achievable large-scale solutions, coupled with a clear vision of the benefits these solutions will have on our communities and families, is an extremely powerful combination. It will motivate people to believe, dream, and act. This message needs to be shared over and over. Blair explains the power of a shared narrative.
The other side of the fence, they have their shared narrative down. That's the part that we have not really talked about because we thought since we had truth on our side, that was enough. But we now know that humans are emotional and their brains work in mysterious ways. But the more we know about that and the more we can nourish good emotions and dispel hurtful emotions or scary thoughts, the more we can work together to embrace the power of our own community, the better we can use proven techniques to include everyone in our climate change communication. Community leaders, kids, scientists, everybody.
The work Nokē does is having a major impact in the work of climate communicators in zoos, aquariums, national parks, and beyond. I learn a lot from Nokē all the time. I encourage you to visit their website for the research, resources, and networking opportunities they provide. Hannah and Blair explain how.
Nokē.org, and we also have a Facebook page, National Network for Ocean and Climate Change Interpretation, and we have a Twitter, which is @_Nokē, N-N-O-C-C-I.
The great thing about Nokē is that there's a bunch of different levels of participation for you. So if you just want to hear more about this stuff, learn about some case studies that were done, see some of the techniques in action, you can go to climateinterpreter.org and read our blog. Anybody can do that. If you work at a zoo, aquarium, museum, science center, if you are a scientist, if you're an informal educator of any kind, you can apply to join Climate Interpreter and get a profile there. Once you're there, you can talk to other members and post questions and ask the community for help.
Many thanks to Hannah Pickard and Blair Bazarich for the great work that you are both doing. In fact, you both got me thinking about our bright future ahead. Drawing on your lessons of focusing on the impacts of our solutions, let's engage our imaginations and do some time traveling. Now it is time for the Art House. Earlier this year at the Citizens Climate Northeastern Regional Conference held in Troy, New York, Sean Daig led us in an exhilarating thought experiment. Sean is the leader for the Mid-Hudson South chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby. I asked him to come on the show and share with us his exercise. As you listen, allow your mind to imagine success. Engage all of your senses.
So one of the things that I found really useful in talking with people is getting them to think about what this world looks like once we've decarbonized it, once we've stopped using fossil fuels. Just start with your day, right? You open your door and you walk out your door, and what's different? What looks different than you've seen before, right? So you got a car in your driveway, and something we know is different is that car is not going to have a tailpipe anymore. What else is different? You're not going to use fossil fuels to heat your home. Houses aren't going to have chimneys. Where we get our electricity from is going to be different. There's going to be no smokestacks on power plants. And if you take those three things, just starting there, you can start to think about, well, what else does that mean? When we take the tailpipes off cars, that means that we're not emitting all of this funky pollution, 6 inches off the ground. And that's a big part of what sort of city smell is. Like, the cities literally smell differently at that point. You close your eyes, the flowers in bloom, the tree blossoms are going to be things that come much more to the forefront because they're not covered in all this other pollution. The horizon changes color. As we stop putting pollution in the air, you won't get the haze on the horizons like you do now. It's going to sound different. The difference between an electric vehicle and a gasoline one driving up the street is huge. And you start multiplying this as you get into these denser city environments, and this whole din of our industry today goes away. And when that drops out, what are you hearing instead? What other voices or noises come to the forefront? Like, what more of nature can you hear? One of the things people got really concerned about when they started thinking about what was coming with climate change is the world they were going to have to sign up for was this, cold, dark place where they just had to turn off all the lights and live in a cold house. It's really important to realize that this future without fossil fuels is kind of an amazing one. In electric vehicles that are quiet and quick, that all of this noise and rumbling on the streets is gone. You're living in houses that don't burn fossil fuels, that are well insulated, using heat pumps and electric to keep the house kind of perfect temperatures year round. It's a cool place. And I think that we need to celebrate what we are trying to create here and paint that picture for people. That's the world I want to be in. That's the world I want for my friends, for my daughter. This is a cool world.
I invite you to continue this exercise. Try some creative writing. Write a short story or a letter from the future about what you see, smell, and hear. Maybe create visual art, a drawing or a painting. If, like me, you can't really draw, get images from magazines and online, then create a collage. Write a song, create a map, choreograph a dance. Use art to capture a vision of a decarbonized world. Even if you do not see yourself as an artsy person, just try it. Please, feel free to share your art with me, and let me know if I can share it with listeners on the program and also on Facebook and Twitter. If you have art for this exercise to share, or if you have an idea for the Art House, just contact me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Now it is time for our monthly puzzler question. Here's the puzzler from last month. You reconnected with a childhood friend, Lydia. She's become worried about climate change, wondering what she can do to prepare for it. While she admires your work in mitigating climate change, she feels a growing interest in adaptation. Lydia asks, what are ways I can help my community to get ready for climate change? This is a big question, and hopefully the beginning of a larger discussion about climate adaptation. I recently spoke with Doug Parsons, the host of America Adapts podcast. He just featured Citizens Climate Radio on his 95th episode. His podcast looks at the many aspects of climate adaptation. So I asked Doug to answer our puzzler question.
I would first start and encourage Lydia to actually learn what climate change might mean to her local community. You never quite know what it's going to mean for someone like who lives in the interior United States or if you're living in coastal. And there's great information. There's a national climate assessment and there's tools. I mean, if she's really curious on what she can do, there's tools that allow her to kind of be like, oh, wow, we're going to be impacted by drought. Oh, we might have more heat events here. And so just get that sort of basic understanding. And then that kind of next step is, all right, what can we do as a community to respond to this? And then, you know, it's getting involved in local government. It's saying, what are you guys doing? Are you discouraging people from living along the floodplain? Because I don't want my insurance rates to go up. I don't want to have to spend money when people shouldn't be living in these areas. You are our local city manager. What are you going to do? Then I think you start thinking a little bit higher. It's like, what are our federal politicians doing? Is our state adapting to climate change? Is there even a plan? Most states don't even really have any sort of adaptation plan for the state, which should really be a structure and a guiding force for people like her to kind of understand what are things that they're going to do. But I think the first steps, like at a home basis, if she was looking at buying a new home, one of the best things she could do is just make sure she's not going to buy a new home in an area that is prone to a disaster risk. Like, don't go if you're in an area prone to wildfire, like in California, they are doing a lot of really innovative work. But at the same time, at the local level, they're not discouraging people from living in this wildfire interface. You know, people live out in the mountains and it's just, we hear about all this destruction that occurs out there just because more people are buying and building in the fire zones. And so, you know, just get educated.
Thank you, Doug. So, are you ready for our new puzzler question? Okay, here goes. You just spoke to a group of middle school students about your climate change work. During the Q&A, a student named Victor says, I am freaking out here because of all the bad stuff I'm seeing, and it seems like it's just getting worse and worse. I really don't see the point of even trying anymore. I think we've gone too far. What difference does this make? Lots of people, young and old, feel the same way. So how do you respond to Victor? How can you validate his fears while also giving him reasons to hope and pursue solutions? I know some of you listen to The Puzzler every month, and you have answers, but you've been too shy to respond. How about you take the plunge with this important scenario? Send me your answers, leave your name, contact info, and where you're from. Get back to me by September 15th, 2019. You can email your answers to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. What I love even more is when you leave a voicemail of 3 minutes or less. Leave a message at the following number, 518-595-9414, plus one if calling from outside the USA. That number again is 518-595-9414. Thank you so much for spending this time with me and our guest. Citizens Climate Radio is written and produced by me, Peter Santoscano. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Flannery Winchester, and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Pera. All of the music we use on the show is licensed unless otherwise specified. I'm so grateful for Silicon Valley North CCL Chapter 4, their many tweets. You can follow us on Twitter at CitizensCRadio. That's Citizens, the letter C, Radio, at CitizensCRadio. And join the discussion at our Facebook group page, facebook.com/groups/citizensclimateradio. Feel free to tweet at me directly at P2SON, the letter P, the number 2, S-O-N. You can find Citizens Climate Radio wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also hear us at northernspiritradio.org. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guest. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.